Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're taking a fascinating plunge into hybrid composites, these incredible materials that mix carbon and glass fibers with an epoxy glue.
Yeah, they're pretty amazing.
You're seeing them pop up in everything from super sleek cars to cutting-edge airplanes because they're seriously strong, but also, you know, super light.
Exactly. And our mission in this deep dive is, well, to figure out how these advanced materials handle being bent. This is a huge deal for engineers designing anything that needs to be reliable, right?
Definitely.
We want to really understand the core ways they break down without getting lost in overly complicated technical stuff.
And to help us on this mission, we've got a fantastic study to unpack. It's called Damage Mechanisms in Hybrid Composites. Experimental Characterization and Energy-Based Numerical Analysis came out just this year in Fracture and Structural Integrity.
Right.
What's really cool about this research is that they didn't just bend things until they broke. They also used super smart computer simulations to really get under the skin of these materials.
That's the key part. At its heart, this study tackles a really fundamental question. When you cleverly combine carbon and glass fibers, how does that change the material's ability to cope with bending?
And maybe even more importantly.
Yeah, and what are the main ways these materials give way when they're pushed too far? Okay, so to kick things off, why even bother making hybrid composites in the first place?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Think of carbon fibers as the rock stars of the material world, incredibly stiff and strong. But they can be a bit on the fragile side sometimes.
And pricey.
And they definitely come with a premium price tag. Now, glass fibers, they're the tough guys. They can absorb a lot more energy before they crack, and they're much kinder to your wallet.
So the big idea with hybrid composites is to snag the best qualities from both. You know, by carefully layering carbon and glass fibers, the goal is a material that's not just strong and rigid, but also can take a good knock and is more affordable than going all carbon. And as you said, understanding how they behave when you bend them is crucial because so many real-world forces involve that kind of stress.
Now, the study makes a really important point. If you just physically bend these materials in a lab, you only get a snapshot of the failure. It can happen super fast.
Way too fast.
Making it hard to see the sequence of events. That's where the computer simulations, the numerical analysis really shine.
Precisely. These computer models, like the finite element analysis they used here, allow researchers to virtually dissect how the material responds.
Mm.
They can essentially hit the slow motion button on the failure process.
Yeah, peer inside the layers.
Exactly. Peer inside the different layers and really see how the stress is spread out and exactly where the damage starts and how it grows. What's fascinating is that this study also looked back at what other researchers have found using these kinds of computer models on different fiber combinations.
Right. Studies by folks like Dong, they found that mixing carbon and glass can actually give you a bending strength that's better than you'd expect if you just averaged the properties.
A synergistic effect.
Yeah. They even figured out that putting the stiffer carbon on the outside and the more flexible glass on the inside could be the sweet spot.
And there was other work, too, like Gopal Raj's looking at recycled fibers, showing if you get a really strong bond between the fibers and the epoxy, you can seriously boost its ability to handle impacts.
Okay.
And Shake's research also backed up the idea of putting carbon on the outer layers for the best bending performance because, well, that's where most of the load ends up.
Makes sense.
Now, what's interesting about this particular study is that they specifically focused on what they call double layer configurations, rather than those sandwich structures that have like a core material in the middle.
Ah, okay. Why that focus?
Well, the researchers point out that these double layer designs can be simpler to make and might have fewer places where a crack could get started compared to those sandwich types.
Fewer weak points.
Exactly. But they also highlight that we don't know as much about how these double layer hybrids break down. So this study really aims to fill in those blanks.
Got it. So how did they actually get their hands dirty and do this research? What materials did they use and what was their process?
Okay, so they used a specific type of epoxy resin. Think of it as a super strong glue from a company called Sikkimin. And they reinforced it with woven carbon and glass fabrics from Rebelco.
Right.
And they cooked up 8 different layering recipes, like different kinds of cakes.
Yeah, okay.
From pure glass fiber all the way to pure carbon fiber, and then a bunch of mixes like 1G7C, that means one layer of glass, and 7 of carbon going all the way up to 5C3G. So a really good range of test subjects.
Sounds like they covered all the bases. And how did they actually put these layered materials together?
They used a pretty standard method called hand layup. Imagine carefully stacking the fabric layers and then soaking them with that epoxy resin.
Okay.
Then, to make sure everything was nice and even and there were no air bubbles, they used vacuum bagging and a hydraulic press to squeeze the layers together while the epoxy hardened.
Get it nice and compact.
Exactly. They even had a post-curing step where they heated the material to a specific temperature to make it fully strong. Once they had these flat panels, they cut them into specific shapes for their bending tests.
And then came the fun part, the breaking point. Literally, How did they actually bend these samples until they failed?
They performed what are called three-point bending tests, and they followed strict international ISO standards for this.
Right.
Picture this. The sample is resting on two supports, and then a machine pushes down in the middle until it snaps. They used a high-tech testing machine, a Shimadzu, and carefully controlled how fast they applied the force and precisely measured how much force it took and how much the sample bent before breaking.
And they tested multiple samples for each recipe.
Oh, yeah. To get reliable results, they tested at least 8 identical samples for each of their 8 different layering recipes. Consistency is key.
Okay, so that's the real-world destruction. Now, tell us about the virtual destruction. How did they build these computer models?
Okay, so they constructed 3D models using a powerful software called ABAQUS. For the actual composite layers, they used what are known as continuum shell elements. Think of them as tiny virtual slices of the material.
Right.
And for the parts that pushed down and supported the sample, they used rigid elements. Now, because the layers are stuck together with epoxy, they use something called cohesive surfaces to model that bonding without having to create separate elements for the glue itself.
Oh, clever. So it simulates the interface.
Exactly. It's like modeling a really thin, strong interface between the layers.
That sounds like it could get pretty complicated where the sample touches the supports and the pushing part. How did they handle that in the model to make sure it was accurate?
Good question. They really zoomed in on those contact areas in the model, making the virtual elements much smaller and more packed together. This finer detail, what's called refining the mesh.
Right, the mesh.
It allows for a more accurate picture of the high stresses that happen in those spots, leading to better predictions of how the material will bend and potentially crack.
Smart. And did they model the whole thing?
Actually, no. To save on computer processing time, they took advantage of the fact that the bending setup is symmetrical and only modeled half of the sample.
Definitely a clever way to save some computing power. And what about how the different layers interact in the model? Did they factor in any kind of friction?
Absolutely. They assigned friction values to the surfaces where the loading and support parts touched the composite, and also between each individual layer within the composite itself. They used values that have been found in other research to try and, you know, accurately represent those interactions.
Now, the big question, how did they actually tell the computer model how the material would break and fail? This sounds like the really tricky part.
It is complex. They used 2 main ways to model damage. For damage within a single layer, like the epoxy cracking or individual fibers breaking, they used something called continuum damage mechanics, or CDM.
Okay, CDM.
They actually created their own version of this model within ABAQS, using a special piece of code, a VUMAT subroutine. This model basically uses a limit on how much stress a fiber can take before it breaks.
A failure criterion.
Exactly, a maximum stress failure criterion. Hmm. And it also considers how much energy it takes for cracks to actually grow. It's not just about when it starts to break, but how much energy it absorbs as it breaks.
So they're not just saying it breaks, but they're also considering how much oomph it takes to break it. That makes a lot of sense. What about when the layers start to separate, that delamination we hear about?
Right, the peeling apart. For that, they used a surface-based cohesive behavior model, or SBCB. This is specifically designed to simulate when bonded surfaces come apart, like the layers in our composite.
Right.
It uses a mathematical description, a traction separation model, of how the interface behaves as it's being pulled apart. They set specific values for things like how stiff that interface is, how much stress it can handle before damage starts, and crucially, how much energy is needed for the layers to completely separate. They even included interaction parameters.
Wow, it sounds like they really got down to the nitty-gritty of how these materials fall apart. Now, given they're using computer simulations, how did they make sure those results actually lined up with their real-world, slower bending tests?
That's a critical point. They used a type of solver in ABAQUSA, the explicit dynamic solver, that's usually used for really fast events, like impacts.
Oh, okay. So how did they adapt that?
To simulate their slower bending tests, they told the model to apply the load very gradually, like really slowly, and made sure the time steps in the simulation were tiny. Critically, they kept a close eye on the amount of kinetic energy in the model.
Why kinetic energy?
If that energy stayed really low, right, like below a small percentage of the internal energy, it meant the process was behaving in a slow, controlled way, quasi-static, as they call it, just like their experiments.
Gotcha.
Plus, as we touched on earlier, they initially used their experimental data to get good starting values for their damage models, and then tweaked them, optimized them, to get the best possible match between the real and virtual tests.
Right, so they've built their virtual braking lab. What did they actually see when they bent those different composite samples in the real world? Any surprises?
Overall, they saw a pretty consistent pattern. The amount of force it took to bend the composites increased in a pretty straight line linearly as they bent it more, until it hit a peak.
The maximum force.
Right. After that peak, the force would drop off pretty quickly as materials started to fail significantly. Interestingly, though, in some of the force versus bending graphs, they saw a kind of up and down zigzag pattern right around that point of maximum force.
A zigzag. What was causing that? Sounds a bit strange.
Yeah, it does look a bit odd on the graph. The researchers think that was from individual fibers snapping one after another, especially in the carbon fiber layers on the side that was being squeezed during bending the compression side.
Oh.
Where the load is applied, there's a lot of stress concentrated. And because carbon fibers are a bit more sensitive to being compressed, they tend to break in sequence, causing those little dips and rises in the force measurement.
Okay, that makes sense. Sequential failure. And how did the hybrid materials perform compared to the ones that were just all carbon or all glass?
Well, as you might expect, the hybrid composites generally performed somewhere in between the pure carbon and pure glass samples. No huge shock there.
Right.
And the exact performance really depended on what they call the hybridization rate, which is basically just how many layers of each type of fiber they used. More fiberglass layers generally meant the composite could bend further before breaking greater displacement, but it couldn't handle as much overall force.
Okay, so a trade-off. But there was a bit of a surprise there, right? This study mentioned that where the fiberglass layers were positioned had an interesting effect.
Yes, that was a key takeaway. Really interesting. They found that when they put more fiberglass layers on the compression side, the side being squished during bending the composite could actually handle slightly more force and bend a little bit more before failing.
That's a bit unexpected given carbon fiber's reputation for strength. Why do you think that happened? Why would glass on the compression side be better?
It boils down to the inherent properties of the fibers themselves. Glass fibers can actually stretch a lot more. They have a higher strain capacity, and they're tougher than carbon fibers.
Right.
Carbon fibers, while they're stiffer and can handle more pulling force, tensile strength, are more brittle and not as strong when you try to compress them compared to how strong they are in tension.
Okay.
So when you have fiberglass on the compression side, its ability to deform more and absorb energy seems to delay when the whole thing starts to break down catastrophically. It props it up a bit longer.
So carbon fibers are more likely to just snap when squeezed, while glass fibers can take more of a squishing. What about on the tension side, the side that's being stretched? Did they see differences there too?
They did. The study noticed a difference in where the fibers tended to break, depending on location. Carbon fibers were more likely to break on the compression side, and sometimes that would lead to layers starting to peel apart that delamination again.
Uh-huh.
Glass fibers, on the other hand, were more likely to break on the tension side, the side being pulled apart.
Interesting. So the experiments gave them a good overall picture, but how well did their computer models actually predict what they saw in the lab? Did the virtual lab match up?
This is where we see if their virtual lab matched the real one. And yeah, this study showed a really good level of agreement between what the computer models predicted and what they actually measured in the experiments.
That's good news for the modeling approach.
Definitely. The force and bending amounts that the model spat out were generally within the typical variations, the standard deviations they saw in their physical tests.
So the predictions were pretty solid. Were there any noticeable differences between the real and virtual tests?
They did note a couple of things. The computer models sometimes predicted a slightly higher maximum force than what they measured experimentally.
Okay, a slight overestimation.
Yeah, just a bit. Also, for the layering recipes that had more than one layer of glass fiber on the bottom, the tension side, the models tended to slightly overestimate how much it would bend before breaking.
Hmm.
But overall, the shapes of the graphs, the force versus bending curves from the simulations, looked very similar to the ones from the experiments for all the different ways they layered the fibers. the general behavior was captured really well.
And they were careful about those potential issues with using a fast event solver for a slow bending process, right? You mentioned the kinetic energy checks.
Absolutely. They kept a close watch on the kinetic energy in their simulations and confirmed that it stayed below a really small percentage, like 5% of the total internal energy. This confirmed that the loading in the model was indeed happening slowly enough, quasi-statically, to accurately represent their real-world tests.
Yes, diligence.
Yeah. They also made sure not to artificially scale the mass in the model, which is sometimes done in explicit dynamics, but could have messed with the quasi-static result here.
Okay, so the models seem reliable. What key insights did they get about how the damage happens by looking at these simulations? What did the models reveal that the experiments couldn't?
This is where the simulations really paid off.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most important findings was that damage within the individual layers, intralaminar damage, things like the epoxy cracking and fibers breaking, was the main way the material absorbed energy and ultimately failed across all the different layering styles.
So failure inside the layers themselves was dominant.
Exactly. The layers peeling apart, the delamination came in second in terms of energy dissipation. They also discovered that when they had glass fiber on the compression side, there was less of this internal layer damage happening before the composite reached its peak bending force.
Okay, so glass and compression suppressed early damage.
It seems so. On the flip side, if the glass was on the tension side, they saw more of this internal damage occurring even before it reached its maximum bend. You could see it in the energy dissipation curves from the model.
And what did the models tell them about when and how that delamination, the peeling between layers, happened? Did it start early or late?
Delamination pretty consistently started happening only after the composite had reached its maximum bending force in all the samples they tested.
So it's more of a consequence of the main failure starting.
That's how it appears, yeah. Pure carbon laminates showed more this layer separation compared to the hybrid mixes, while the pure glass laminates hardly showed any delamination at all, which lines up with the idea that carbon fiber fracture might initiate it.
That's an interesting contrast. So the carbon fibers breaking seem to be more likely to cause those layers to separate. What about the friction between the layers in the simulations? Did that give them any clues?
Yes. That was another subtle detail the model picked up. The way the layers rubbed against each other also seemed to depend on where the glass fibers were.
How so?
When glass was on the compression side, the friction energy between the layers tended to increase steadily as they bent it more, right up until the end of the test.
Okay.
However, when the glass was on the tension side, they saw a sudden drop in friction energy after the peak force. Their theory is that this could be because the layers were starting to pull apart or fail significantly, reducing the contact area and therefore the friction between them.
Ah, that makes sense. Less contact, less friction. So by looking at how much energy was being absorbed in each layer in the simulations, were they able to pinpoint where the damage was most concentrated? Like which specific layers took the most punishment?
Definitely. Their detailed analysis of the intralaminar damage energy layer by layer was really revealing. It showed that in the hybrid composites, the outermost carbon fiber layers were taking the biggest hit.
The ones on the very top and bottom.
Essentially, yes. But it depended on the glass placement. If the glass was on the squished compression side, it was the outermost carbon layer on the stretched tension side, layer hashtag one, that experienced the most damage energy dissipation.
Okay.
If the glass was on the stretched side, it was the outermost carbon layer on the squished side, layer hashtag eight, that saw the most damage.
So the outer carbon layer opposite the glass took the brunt.
That's what the energy analysis suggested. What's also interesting is that the layers in the middle of the composite showed the least amount of damage, with one particular layer, often layer hashtag four in their eight-layer setup, being the least affected.
Like a neutral zone almost.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
They also confirmed that having more glass layers overall meant less intralaminar damage accumulating before they reached that peak bending force.
And what about those samples that were purely carbon or purely glass? Where did the damage tend to start in those, according to the models?
In the pure carbon material, 8C, damage first popped up in the outermost layers on both the stretched and squished sides, layers hashtag one and hashtag eight, at roughly the same time, and then it spread rapidly through the other layers.
Okay, fast progression in pure carbon.
Yes. In the pure glass material, HG, the damage also started in the outer layers, first on the compression side, hashtag eight, then the tension side, hashtag one. But the progression was much more gradual compared to the carbon.
Interesting difference in speed. The study also zoomed in on two representative hybrid setups. one with 6 carbon layers and 2 glass, 6C2G, and another with 2 glass and 6 carbon, 2G6C. What were the main differences they saw in how the damage progressed in those? Let's start with tensile damage.
Okay, so comparing those two, when they looked at the damage from pulling forces, the tensile damage, in the 2G6C setup, that's the one with glass on the tension side, the damage started in the last 2 carbon layers. Layers #7 and #8, and then spread upwards towards the middle. It looked like the failure involved most of the carbon layers, from #5 up to #8.
Okay, quite widespread in the carbon. What about the 6C2G?
In the 6C2G setup, which has glass on the compression side, the initial tensile damage was in the very last carbon layer, or layer #8. Then it moved down to the 5th layer, #5. But the overall failure seemed more intense, more concentrated maybe.
Why the difference?
They think this is because carbon fiber is actually better at absorbing tensile damage energy compared to glass.
Okay. What about the damage from squishing forces, the compressive damage, in those 2 configurations?
Right. Compression. In the 2G6C sample, glass on tension, the squishing damage started in the glass layer itself, layer #1, and then spread to the carbon layer right next to it, layer #2.
So starting in the glass.
Yes. But in the 6C2G sample, glass on compression, it started in the 2nd glass layer, layer #2, then jumped to the 1st carbon layer, #3, and then spread to the carbon layers below, #4.
That seems counterintuitive again.
It does. But this seems to suggest that having glass on the compression side can actually delay the onset of compressive damage in the glass itself, perhaps forcing it to initiate in the adjacent carbon layers first, which we know are more prone to it under compression.
Fascinating. And finally, how did the layers peeling apart the delamination differ in those 2 key hybrid configurations?
They saw similar initial delamination damage starting near the last carbon layers for both setups. However, the 6C2G sample, the one that didn't have glass on the compression side, experienced much more severe and widespread delamination. When they looked at the simulation at the point of maximum bending displacement, they even saw visible separation between the glass and carbon layers in that 6C2G configuration, as well as between the initial carbon fiber layers near the tension side. It peeled apart more dramatically.
So putting glass on the compression side seemed to hold things together better against delamination too?
That seems to be the implication, yes.
Wow. So after all that incredibly detailed work, combining the bending tests and these really sophisticated simulations, what were the main conclusions that the researchers drew from this study? Can we boil it down?
Yeah, let's summarize. They really emphasized the big differences in bending strength and displacement between pure carbon and pure glass materials, with the hybrid mixes falling somewhere in between, as expected.
Okay, baseline established.
But the crucial point they kept coming back to was how important it is where you put the glass fiber layers. It's not just how much glass, but where it is.
Location, location, location.
Exactly. Putting glass on the side, being compressed, with depression side, led to higher strength and less bending before failure. Putting glass on the side being stretched, the tension side, resulted in lower strength, but more flexibility, more displacement before it broke.
Got it. Key design choice right there.
Absolutely. They confirmed that damage within the layers, that intralaminar damage, is the primary way these materials fail. It dissipates the most energy, followed by the layers peeling apart, the delamination.
Okay, primary and secondary mechanisms.
And crucially, less intralaminar damage builds up before the peak force when you have glass on the compression side. Delamination generally starts happening around the point of peak force. It's more significant in pure carbon and barely happens at all in pure glass.
Right.
The friction between layers also behaves differently depending on the glass fiber's location, potentially indicating how the layers are interacting or separating.
Mm-hmm.
In the hybrid materials, the outer carbon layers tend to absorb the most energy through internal damage. Having more layers packed in the middle helps to limit how that damage spreads through the thickness. And more glass layers generally mean less internal damage accumulating before you reach that peak force.
Okay.
And finally, they saw that the specific way you layer the carbon and glass fibers really affects how the layers start to separate, those delamination patterns. Ultimately, the study shows how we can better design these hybrid composites to withstand bending in specific ways, and importantly, to control how damage progresses within the material. It gives engineers better tools.
So the key thing for you, the listener, to remember is this. When it comes to these mixed carbon and glass composites, it's not just about the ratio of fibers you use, but absolutely critically, how you layer them. The specific arrangement has a huge impact on how well they can handle bending forces and the ways in which they eventually break.
Exactly right.
This understanding is absolutely vital for engineers aiming to build stronger and more dependable structures in all sorts of industries, aerospace, automotive, you name it.
And it really gets you thinking, doesn't it? Considering all these findings, how precisely could engineers tailor the layering of carbon and glass fibers to create composite materials that are perfectly suited for very specific real-world bending situations, like optimizing for impact versus just static load?
Yeah, or maybe for fatigue resistance over many cycles.
Right. And beyond just the layering, what other factors, maybe the type of epoxy glue used or the way the fibers themselves are woven together, might also play a really big role in fine-tuning how these materials perform under stress?
Definitely something to ponder. If you're eager to dive even deeper into the fascinating world of composite materials science, we highly recommend checking out the study we've been discussing today, Damage Mechanisms in Hybrid Composites, and the other research it references.
It's a deep dive well worth taking.
Thanks for tuning in.